Here's Cooper. Cooper with hands out. Cooper! Cooper!
What's good and welcome. It's 2023, y'all. That's crazy. That's a fake ass year. It don't even sound right. But this is our first podcast of, oh yeah, it's Diaspora United. Man, I'm rusty. It's been a minute. Welcome to Diaspora United. I'm Andre Carlisle, and I am here, as always, with Courtney Stith. Courtney, how are you? How you been?
I'm okay. I have not been on Twitter in many moons, and it's been, like, great for my mental health. I, like, work out again.
Oh, wow.
I don't fall asleep before 2 o'clock in the morning anymore, or, like, really after 2 o'clock in the morning. Hmm. Been, like, going to sleep, like, at 1 a.m. or even, like, earlier, which is, like, a huge deal for me, because I normally fall asleep around, like, previously I used to fall asleep around midnight, and now, yeah, I don't stay up all night. More productive at work. I don't know. I don't know if I can really make the full comeback to Twitter anymore, because I can't lie, my life without it has been, like, perfectly fine.
What's it like being a fully functional, like, adult? Because I still have yet to be one, because I refuse to get off Twitter.
I can't lie. It's like fully ignorance is bliss. Like, I mean, you know, we're in a few group chats and someone brings something up and I'm like, what? Like, I just have no idea what's going on 99% of the time. Like, I mean, I do, obviously, I still go on the podcast Twitter, like, I don't know, maybe once every 2 days for, like, 5 minutes. Or I'll, like, pop in a tweet a goal and then, like completely close the app. It's not like I'm, like, actively scrolling or anything like that, or spending any more than probably a grand total of 6 minutes on Twitter. And even then, for, like, work, like, I'll go on a really old account that I've managed to crack the password to, because I'm now in, I don't know if it's me being a boomer, but all of my passwords are in a password manager, and they're complicated, and I'm like, I was told that's better so I don't get hacked, but if someone was, like, gun to your head, what's your password? I'd be like, my G, I don't know. But yeah, being off Twitter is great. I took a little social, like, I also wasn't on Instagram for a bit. Now I'm a little bit back on Instagram. But yeah, not being on social media is, like, wow, what a concept. I, like, am living the life that my friends live who aren't like heavily on social media, and I'm like, wow, you guys are y'all are living a great life, even though I will say it has very much pulled me out of the news cycle with things happening.
I was going to say that's my thing. I think I just have too much, like, FOMO all the time. Like, I just like knowing things that are going on, and, like, you know, and I do, like, there is a communal aspect to Twitter that I like, especially because, like, curated, like, a cool, like, group of folks that I, like, interact with and all of that. And so that part of it's cool. But yeah, sometimes you dip into the bad parts and then it's really bad. But even the good parts, like you said, like, they, like, my bedtime is straight up like 2 a.m. And it's just like bit that, like, that's just what it has been since, like, before, like, college and before. And so I'm, like, used to it, but it's probably not healthy. So, like, I envy you, but also I ain't gonna do it.
I'm telling you, your life actually changes, because at one point I was, like, going to sleep at, like, 2-3 a.m. really. And your life really changes when you start going to bed even before. Like, I can tell, like, a huge difference, even if I sleep the exact same amount, I can tell a huge difference of when I fall, like, when I go to bed at 2 a.m. versus if I go to bed at, like, 1 a.m. or before. It's kind of insane. And I discovered, because, I mean, y'all probably have followed me on Twitter, I, like, tweet often about how I sometimes have insomnia. And, yeah, discovered that if I have a rigorous workout, like, 4 hours or earlier before I go to bed, I literally sleep like a baby. I get in bed and my body says, get off TikTok, we're going to sleep. And I'm like, wow, oh my god, what my life has become, how nice. But anyway, enough about me and my, oh my god, wow, looks like my skin is clearing up. I don't have as many bags under my eyes anymore. Life. But Andre, we have a good review that I've been very excited to read for the past few weeks since the moment I saw it. And this review is some hearty cakes. appreciate you, Hardy Cakes. The title, Eating Them Up, which, yes. And so it begins, why does 6 stand 7? Because 7, 8.
Yeah, I read saw that. That tweet, I just lost it. I was like, this is so stupid, but it's so great.
Look, it is such like a new, like just a modern way of saying, instead of like 6, like why 6, 7, 6 afraid of 7, because 7, 8, 9, not just saying why does 6 stand 7, because 7, 8. I had a great laugh at that. But it continues. Y'all are 8, 9, 10 igniting math with me. Important combos while keeping it 100. It's often difficult, but so refreshing to hear what needs to be said / called out on a mic. You know the gif I'm talking about. That's y'all with humor, deep knowledge of the game, kindness, and a welcoming touch for a Gen X Black woman who wants to know more about all of these Black women playing soccer now. Because what? We play soccer. Of course we do. And it's ours now. Yes, it is. It Facts. Is ours now. Facts. And then it continues, keep up the awesome work. I hope I did Courtney proud with the opening lines here. Hardy Cakes, you did. You did. I really did appreciate the opening line.
It was excellent. Excellent. Thank you for the review. And y'all, please leave reviews. They are kind. They're nice. They're fun. We like to read them, as you can tell, on the podcast.
Put dad jokes good. In them. Please.
Yes. Remember the directive. If you're new here, hello. Hello and welcome. Thank you. But yeah, when you leave a review, drop a dad joke. So that way we have to read it. We have to absorb it. We have to deal with it. And it just turns into a little bit of hilarity. And we appreciate it. So thank y'all. And yeah, and anything else before we get on to the topics of the day?
That you hate dad jokes, but I love them. So like fill all of our reviews with dad jokes. Because Andre's going to groan and grimace and read them, and I'm just gonna be having the time of my life. So keep
that's true. That is exactly how it goes.
I love a dad joke. did I tell you about the sweatshirt I had that said Kale on it?
You did not, but now you must.
Okay, I don't have it anymore, and I don't know where it went, and I'm heartbroken because I used to wear it around UVA around UVA all the time. Okay, picture like a sweatshirt that says Yale on it. Think of the font. Think of kind of what it looks like. But instead of Yale, replace the Y with a K and it says Kale. And it's just like not an actual dad joke, but it kind of feels like a dad joke.
Yes, it is very dad joke adjacent.
And I literally used to wear it around all the time. And sometimes people would come up to me and be like, oh my God, did you go to Yale? But then they'd like take a second look. And I'd be like, no, I'm just deeply passionate about Kale. Which I will say is true because I do love Kale. But yeah, it's just, it was really a moment in time. I don't know where that sweatshirt is, which makes me sad. My older sister probably stole it from me because we take each other's clothes. But it was a really good sweatshirt that said Yale, that said Kale on it. That's a good time.
That's excellent and well worth it. And honestly, I hope you find it because it sounds hilarious. And I think, I don't know what I would do if I was there and somebody came up to you and be like, oh my God, did you go to Yale? Because I think I'd be like, please stop.
It's because you see that A-L-E in like yes. Yale font.
Yes.
And then you're like beeline because like college alums. And then they're like,
and it's also the thing about like people that go to like, have gone to like Harvard and Yale. Sorry, Kaya. This may not include you. I just want to shout out Kaya. She was in law school. A friend of the pod, Kaya McCullough at Harvard. But like normally the joke is people from Yale and Harvard cannot wait to tell you that they went to Yale or Harvard. So like any opportunity to mention it. And that's why I think it's like, it's another layer of funny just because it's like, oh, you saw the font and you thought you were like gonna be able to like, that was an open invitation. And it's like, nah, I just really like Kale. And then it like shuts them down. And that's
it's the best part about it. It is the best part about it. And to be fair, like I understand it. Because I went to UVA and whenever I genuinely don't wear UVA stuff out and about anymore, especially in the DC state of Virginia, I don't wear any UVA gear because half the time I don't want to talk to anyone. And if someone sees me with anything UVA, they're going to be like, oh my God, and come like tell me about their life story. And I'm like, well, I love that for you. I don't really want to talk about it. So yeah, when people are just like, oh my God, Yale. And I'm like, it's Kale. I just have a wonderful time.
Exceptional. All right, so we're gonna move. It's been a while, y'all. You'll have to forgive us. This is what happens when we haven't talked in a while. We just kind of go where we go, and it's all good. And y'all, you know, hopefully you love it because we're having a good time.
You're along on this journey with us.
Yeah, exactly. Come on the journey. You'll be, you'll love it. It'll be fine. In this episode, though, we are going to get into the topics. We're going to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team roster for the New Zealand friendlies that are coming up. We're going to talk about some NWSL transactions. They've been transacting. Things have been happening. It's going to be very interesting, and we're going to talk about a lot of it. We're going to talk about the draft, because that is also this week. It's going to be very interesting to see. We already know a couple picks. We know a couple things, but there's a lot brewing underneath. So we might speculate, but we're definitely going to talk about some draft picks, some people that we're really excited to see in the NWSL in 2023. And then we're going to end with the NWSL. They did release, they called it corrective action. And I think it's important to talk about those things and kind of what it is. It's off the back of the report that dropped over the little winter break. There were some things that were mentioned, and we'll get into it. We'll break it down a little bit and talk about that, and then do Heated and Hyped and be out of here. So, Courtney, should we just get started?
Yes, let's get started.
All right, so the U.S. Women's National Team, the roster was released for these friendlies versus New Zealand. But before the rosters were released, actually, I don't even know the order that it happened, but in the order that I have it in the rundown, we're going to talk about Sophia Smith first, because she's not actually on the roster, but we wanted to talk about her because we want to shout her out, because she was nominated and won, awarded, the 2022 Player of the Year. That's dope. What is wild is that she, in 2022, is the first Black player to be awarded this, which just don't make no damn sense. But also, that's a separate conversation. It's really, the answer could only be Sophia Smith. So at least they got it right, because she was balling all year. NWSL MVP, championship game MVP. She scored some ridiculous goals. I did a thread of some of the goals that she scored. I was like, she did all this in 2022? Yeah, her 2022 was phenomenal.
And it was it was truly her second full year as a professional.
Yes.
Like, that's insane.
She's a problem.
She's several problems. You know how we say that Fallon Toulouse Joyce is like several octopi in a trench coat? Yes. Sophia Smith is that, but like for a striker.
Yes.
I don't know if it's like she's technically like has like eight like extra legs or something. But she's just several problems and will continue to be several problems for many, many years to come.
Yes. So I mentioned, well, first, just shout out to her. You know, I just well deserved that. I'm glad they got the voting right. It would have been really unfortunate if they would have given it to somebody else, because all the work that Sophia Smith had done, there was really no one else that could have qualified for the award. She did not make this roster, though, because she was pictured in a boot over the holidays. Apparently, she has some sort of foot injury, but it's not meant to be serious. So we're okay. It seems like we're all right. Everything's fine. I know we got a lot of injuries on the team, so we get a little shook anytime we see a boot or somebody's held out because of injury. But reports are it's nothing serious. So we'll do that. So let's go ahead and just talk about the roster. I'm going to run through it real quick. Goalkeepers. AD French retains her spot. She got back into the squad after, you know, we did a lot of yelling about AD French getting back into the squad because of the great season she had with Kansas City. She's back on the team along with Casey Murphy and Alyssa Nair. Defenders, you got world-class Alana Cook. You got Emily Fox, Naomi Girma, Rookie of the Year and Defender of the Year, Naomi Girma. Sophia Huerta, Haley Mace, Becky Sauerbrunn, Emily Sana is back from an injury. And they list Crystal Dunn as a defender. Y'all know how I feel about that. Whack. Midfielders, Sam Coffey, Lindsay Oran, Taylor Korniak, Rose Lavelle, Christy Mewis, Ashley Sanchez, and Andy Sullivan. Those are two different people. I cover the spirit. I know these things. Ashley Etch starts with the forwards. Alex Morgan, Midge Purse is back. Love to see that. Trinity Rodman, Lynn Williams is back. We'd love to see that. And Mal Pugh is back, but with a different last name. She got married. She is now Mallory Swanson.
Yeah. Just quickly starting us off, obviously we were unhappy that Crystal Dunn's listed as a as a defender, yes, and not in the midfield where she belongs.
Where she can help the team the most, by the way.
That too, especially now that their Emily Fox is in the mix, seems back mm-hmm. healthy. Sofia Huerta, Haley Mace, like there's yes. absolutely no reason. But I have a question for you, Andre, about the goalkeeper, because AD French 100% deserves to be there. Okay. If I'm remember, did she get second team all NWSL this past year?
I can't remember. My memory cannot go back that far, so I do not know.
But I feel like she should. It sounds right. It does. But one thing I was surprised about, at least for the goalkeepers, I was not surprised that Alyssa Nair was there, not surprised that AD French is there. Both, to me, are different sides of the same brick wall. But I was a bit surprised about Casey Murphy, because last time we saw, if I'm remembering correctly, Bella Bixby was in the mix. And so I'm a bit surprised that they chose Casey Murphy over Bella Bixby.
You know, to be honest, to answer this, I probably, like, I don't want to go, because as we do need to talk about the bad of this roster, right? Because there are some things, some questions that we have, some things that we don't particularly like or don't understand. And I think this falls into the category of not necessarily understanding. I think there are some decisions that are being made because people want to make them, not because there's an actual, you know, form-based case up for a player. And we've seen that some players can play their way onto the team and then forever remain, forever get a spot. And we see that some players can't ever get on the team, no matter how well they perform. And, you know, or they can't get dropped if they're on the team, no matter how poorly they perform. So I think if you look at the numbers, if you look at the performances, especially in the NWSL, Casey Murphy did not have a great year. I know she started off the year injured, and then it kind of took a while for her to return to, like, you know, her somewhat close to her decent form, but still not her best. And, you know, you do kind of wonder, like, you know, Bella Bixby had a great year. You know, you see even, you know, again, spirit-wise, you know, Aubrey Kingsbury, I think she also had a decent year. She faced a lot of shots, and things were a little difficult with the Spirit. But if you look at how many games they lost and drew, it's not like there were many blowouts. It was always very, very close and did a lot to keep the games close. So, you know, I kind of agree. It just seems to be in the category of one of those things where they see Casey Murphy as next. She is, like, 6 feet tall. And so I think they want her to grow and take that spot. And so they're going to continue to call her up because they see her already, that kind of has been crowned as, like, the next goalkeeper once Alyssa Nair steps aside.
Yeah, and sorry, I meant to say, like, Bella Bixby hasn't been on a roster in a while, but they've kind of seemed to somewhat, like, at least in my brain, it's like Alyssa Nair has always been the number one and AD French has always been the number two, even though AD got dropped unfairly from the rosters. But I always kind of think of that three and that third spot. And so we've seen, yeah, Aubrey Kingsbury come in, but also Casey Murphy come in. And so I think for the keepers that were, like, nominated for the best players of the year, I was just, you know, a bit surprised that, yeah, like, a player like Bella Bixby wasn't called up, especially, you know, given form. But Andre, as you said, form sometimes with an asterisk matters for certain players.
Go ahead and talk about it. We might as well move on to it.
Might as well move on. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're just going to dive right into the bad news. So friend of the pod, Mia Official, fresh off a golden boot in the Apertura for Liga MX Femenil, fresh off a championship for Tigres in Liga MX Femenil, has now scored, as of literally today, because she scored a brace in the first game back for the Clausura for Liga MX Femenil, 34 goals, has literally been the most consistent striker in the U.S. women's national team pool for the past two, like, the two consistent strikers to me have been her and Sophia Smith. And no call-up. It just, to me, it does not make sense. And it's like, I think there are a lot of things you could potentially blame it on, because I know we're going to talk about this, but this is like a, you know, an unofficial FIFA window. Teams aren't required to release players. So, like, we know that New Zealand is going to be without about 13 players. Like, a lot of their starters are not going to be there. So these games, I'm not sure necessarily how much we'll be able to take away from them in terms of, you know, where the U.S. women's national team is in terms of progression and things like that. But know me official for a player that is so consistent in that last year, Vlaco said, you know, she needs to continue being consistent, continuing scoring goals. And she literally now has 34 of them. And out of the last, Andre, I actually have a quick stat for you. Out of the last six braces scored by Tigres players, five of them have been scored by Mia Fischel. Her form right now is ridiculous. She can score tap-ins, she can score headers, she can cut in and get a curler. She is scoring from all over the place, and there's still no call for the US Women's National Team. It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. If we're talking about form, it does not make any sense.
Yeah, it continues to confuse me. I mean, I seriously don't get it. We know that we need to score goals. That has been a big problem of the team. We get a lot of chances, can create a lot of chances because we have excellent wide players. We have very, very good, when the midfield's well, we have a decent midfield that can work the ball and get chances. But really, it's those attacking players that do a lot. And I just think that we need somebody who's very good at putting the ball in the back of the net. And it doesn't make any sense to not call up somebody who's been doing it consistently for over a year now. So it's confusing. But I think my biggest concern is with this window in particular, and you kind of mentioned it, this is not an official FIFA window. We're going to New Zealand, and they're going to be without a number of players. I think it's near double-digit number of players that aren't going to be called up for this, including a good chunk of their defense. And to me, you're bringing like the team that you would bring if you had like an actual competition that counted. You're bringing that team to New Zealand. What are you going to learn? You've been calling these players up. You know how these players play together. You know what they can do. Why would you call, like, sure, if you want to bring some players, you know, of the core players, just to make sure like the standards remain high or they can help, you know, facilitate trainings and everything like that. But I do not understand not bringing up players to this, but you know the competition you're going to face and be able to say, okay, we can use this as a window to evaluate other talent that we haven't had an opportunity to evaluate. And I think Claire Watkins said, you know, responded to one of my tweets and said, I think one of the biggest problems is that with Blacko is everything just kind of feels boring. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's actually the right word. Like the selection comes out, we're all like, oh God, you know, here we go. We're going to have another day of discourse on it. And we do, but it's because it doesn't really change. And there's no excitement. There's nothing interesting that goes on. You're not saying like again, I cover the Spirit. I do not understand why Ashley Hatch is undroppable from this team. I do not understand why for midfield, like Taylor Korniak, Christy Mewis. I do not understand why they seem to be like always on the team when they don't think they need to be. I think the option, like trying to get Taylor Korniak as a nine, I'm like, it's gimmicky and fun sometimes, but I don't think that should be part of a plan given the talent you have access to in this team. We don't need to do something. We shouldn't need to do something like that. Sure, if it's a World Cup final or something and you just need to hoof the ball along, okay, cool. We can do that. It ain't like she needs practice being 6'1". She already is. So like, we don't need to have her doing that in these random friendly exhibition games. Like, you don't really need that. I don't know. It never sits right with me. It always seems a little weird. Whenever they have an opportunity to do something interesting, they don't. And I just really don't get it. And I'm kind of over it. It's just like, we have the same conversations and nothing really changes. And that's kind of annoying because it ain't like, I said this on Twitter, but I mean, his prerogative to do this the way he wants, but the results better be good, and the results haven't been good. So now it's like, what are you going to do? Oh, you're going to keep doing the same thing? Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like with this, and I don't know if because this year, I feel like, and Andre very much correct me if I'm wrong, I'm quickly trying to Google it, but at least the past few January camps, and I know obviously we are still living in a pandemic, but the previous January camps have been mostly domestic. And I mean, they've been and to be fair, a lot of these players, aren't actually like playing abroad. So they didn't necessarily have to like worry about, you know, being released from camp. Cause when they play here in the NWSL isn't started by this time. So it's like not necessarily a factor, but I think one thing for me that's concerning, and it just kind of comes with the overall squad number, like he called a 24-person squad when at least for 2020 and 2021, we saw those squad sizes. In 2020, it was 28, and in 2021, it was 27 players called in. Like, you had, you know, multiple goalkeepers, or you know, they were calling in players that we maybe hadn't necessarily seen in a while, or being put in different positions. And so, I don't know, for me, it's just disappointing, because I feel like the purpose of this January camp, especially if we like think about the equivalent on the men's side, is like that January camp, which none of the men's internationals that are playing abroad come to because they're in the middle of the season. Like, the purpose of that is to really evaluate the players that are playing in the in MLS. And so while it is obviously it's apples and oranges, because the majority of the women's national team players play domestically anyway, like, this is a really great opportunity for you to expand the roster, see some new faces coming back in. Like, obviously you can, you know, bring in your vets, things like that, make sure people are match fit or getting match fit, especially, you know, starting the beginning of a World Cup year. But also at the same time, like, bring in new faces. Like, you probably know going in, especially going to New Zealand, that you're going to be playing for a squad at normal times. The U.S. would easily win, or semi-easily win. I don't think it's necessarily, like, super, like, that's not, like, a hot take for me to say. But, you know, this is a really good opportunity to bring in some people, like, some players who are, you know, maybe on the fringes of a World Cup roster, or maybe you're, like, that young player coming in who, you know, as they like to say, like, needs to learn the system and learn how to be a national team player and X, Y, and Z things. Like, this is the time to do it, especially for your domestic players. And so it's just, like, super disappointing that we, like, obviously we're seeing, well, not new faces, but faces we have not seen in a while, like Lynn coming back from injury, which is very exciting. But I don't know. I feel like they should have at least brought another four, if not five players to, you know, of players who have also been playing well in the league. Like, where's Carson Pickett? Like, I honestly always go back to Carson Pickett. But, like, you know, players like Carson Pickett, Brianna Pinto, like, where's the NWSL assist leader, Jessica McDonald? Well, actually, we know where she is. She's playing in Australia. But, look, that's an easy plane ride, okay?
It sure is.
But, yeah, I just feel like there is a really good opportunity to bring in some players who have been really, really good in the league. And as they like to say, you know, league play now matters. But we're really not seeing that it actually matters for the majority of people. Because if we're being our most honest selves, if it was, a lot of this roster would look different, because there are players on this roster who did not have great seasons. And to be fair, that's like across the board. Like, there are players on here who did not have the best seasons. But also, if we're thinking about, like, you know, league leaders or people who are on the league's best 11, there are players who are from the U.S. and can play for the U.S. who are not a part of this conversation currently.
I think that's 100% correct. And yeah, you're right. In 2021, the camp was in Orlando. They played two games against Colombia, and they brought 27 players. And we go into and of course, travel expenses and all of that. So yeah, I do understand the strain on resources in terms of going all the way to New Zealand. I agree with you. I just don't. The number of players, the games that you're going to get there, given how many players New Zealand's going to be missing, I don't really get it. We also have, you know, one other bit of news that is bad news is there is no sign of Sam Mewis, the Tower of Power.
There's no Samilton.
We're a little shook. We don't know what that's going to mean for the long run. We haven't seen her in a while, shut down for the season last year. And Lynn's back. That's great to see. Her snacks partner, I don't know, but we a little shook. We may talk about that a little later as well, because I think it relates to something else that happened in the NWSL. But, I mean, honestly, I don't really have anything else to say about it. I think this is just kind of the way this team and the selection is going to go. We know how it's going to go. We know how they're going to play. We know how they're going to line up. We know exactly what the midfield is going to do. And we'll just see if they can score. I mean, they're going to be able to score goals against New Zealand, I'm assuming. But, like, I just don't think we're going to learn anything.
That doesn't happen.
Right.
The takes that will fly.
Right. It's just, even though, like, you can go there and you can beat New Zealand like 8-0 twice, and then what did you learn? How much better are you? Could you go to Wembley again and play England and not get embarrassed? Like, could you, like, what could you do? Could you go to Spain and play that squad again and not lose 2-0? Like, what can you actually do from this game? I don't really see it, but, you know, okay, that's where we at. So I ain't got nothing else to say. If you got something else to say, go for it. But otherwise, we can just move on to the NWSL.
I just want to add some more players that made the NWSL best 11 and second best 11 that can play for the U.S. and have not been called. In Ducamp, Lo Labonta.
Yeah.
Where's Lo? My question. Tata Milazzo, Kelly Hubley, who actually, I think Kelly Hubley had a great year this year. And I understand, I'm not saying to make these players like full-time national teamers, but I don't know. I'm just like, where?
Yeah, honestly, we're going to talk about her later, but Yasmin Ryan, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of would 100%. Be helpful. You want midfielders who are dynamic? Let's go.
Newest Gotham player, Yasmin Ryan. Wardrobe plus all year. Real excited about that. Real, I love that for me personally. But yeah, I like, there's just, you know, there are players that are missing, and it's like, hey, girly swirl. That's like my current favorite way to phrase to talk to people, is just saying, hey, girly swirly. I don't know why it's a very fun phrase to say. But yeah, it's like, hey, girly swirly, where are these players? So yeah. This is just, it's just like a little like, meh. It's like, okay, obviously we have some players coming back in from injury, but it's like, meh. A good news, though, I will say, is that we learned in the press conference, Kat is on quote unquote, on schedule to return to the national team and return to playing club soccer, which I'm personally thrilled about.
Yes.
Very, very excited about that.
If there's one player that can, like, take the dull, boring, monotonous, beige slop, of Black Coast tactics and make it shine, it is Kat. She kind of is central to everything working. We saw how it looked when she played. I was really devastated when she tore her ACL. Really would have been interesting to see what she could have done, even with the tactics and the style and the way that we played. In that trip against Europe and England and Spain, and then of course in Germany at the end of the year. So yeah, I just keep thinking about that and how she fits in and everything that she does. She kind of does like two things at once, and you shouldn't really need that as a manager. It's almost like, it's like the same thing with Jill Ellis. She really needed like Crystal Dunn to be everything. And she was like, okay, I got it. And I'm going to shut down some of the best wingers in the world. No problem. We'll get you a World Cup. And it's like, you could scheme better so that this didn't have to happen every single time, but she didn't. And I think it was Steph Yeong who ended up publishing the piece. If it's not, I'm sorry if it's somebody else, but I think it was just like, Crystal Dunn needs a break or needs a nap or something like that. Because I mean, the effort she put in through that run, it still does not get enough credit. She was unbelievable.
Yeah, 100%. Andre, one last thing. It's 2023. Do you know that the World Cup is less than 200 days away?
That's ridiculous.
I know.
But also, I'm also ready.
I'm not so ready. I'm like ready and not ready. But
it's
going to
be so fun.
Where did this time go? I feel like it was literally just 2019.
Oh, it was.
The World Cup kicking off on my birthday. I almost tried to just book a flight and go to France that day. I was like, it's my birthday. I want to go see Wendy Renard play in person. Sadly, I did not go. But the World Cup, 200 days away. We're officially on the road to Australia, New Zealand.
I love that for us. All right. Anything else, or let's get into NWSL?
Let's get into NWSL.
So NWSL has gotten a little bit like bonkers, because this is what happens in the offseason. You know, first of all, you had the addition of free agency, which we have seen some dopeness happen. And we also know when the draft comes about, which first of all, before we get into it, very much team hashtag abolish the draft. The draft is a bad process, is a bad system, should not exist. We can get into that later. But the draft is coming up this week. And whenever that happens, teams position. And so Angel City most recently made the move. It's a big four-team deal. I'm not going to redo all the thing, because if you've been following, you probably know the details. But basically, a whole lot of money changed hands, a whole lot of things changed hands, picks, and also some players. So basically, Orlando ended up with a whole lot of money. Angel City got the first overall pick in the upcoming draft. And Yasmin and Ryan went from Portland to Courtney's Gotham FC. And that is just a really dope move.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I have been saying for a while that Gotham's midfield needs some upgrades. And now, like, you know, Yasmin Ryan is a great player. We waxed lyrical about her on several different occasions last season. She was so good for Portland and truly so important to everything that Portland was doing when she was on the field. They were a completely different team with her off the field. So really, really excited. She is coming to Gotham. She seems very excited about it, because I also am very aware that, you know, hopefully, like, players are okay with all of these trades and things like that. Because we do know that not every player in this league is a free agent and doesn't have 100% control over their careers. So, but, you know, from all accounts, she seems very happy and excited to come to Gotham. Yeah, that trade was kind of insane, because Orlando got a lot of money. And Gotham went from the first overall pick to the second overall pick, which is still great.
Great move. Got Yasmin Ryan. That is a great move.
Yeah, I think that is very, very smart. Gotham also, I think one thing that people forgot about was that from the expansion draft and previous drafts, Gotham had actually been sitting on a lot of allocation money.
Yeah.
I know allocation money at times feels like monopoly money, because it kind of is. But yeah. Gotham actually had been sitting on, like if you're like, where did Gotham get all that money from? Like, they'd actually been sitting on a lot of allocation money from, you know, various trades and things like that as well. So yeah, Gotham now is number 2 overall pick, so I still think they're in a great spot. I hope that this year goes better than the last time Gotham had a top 5 pick, because Brianna Pinto just signed a brand new contract with North Carolina. She does not play for Gotham anymore. Obviously, she hasn't played for Gotham in a while, but that, you know, her rookie season, I can probably say, and I don't think it's a hot take to say, that her rookie season did not turn out in the way that she hoped. And yeah, so that was like the first big blockbuster trade. I would not be surprised tomorrow if we see more blockbuster trades, just by the nature of the NWSL. It's never a quiet day. It's never a quiet moment. Anytime that there's like any sort of draft, I feel like, between like the NWSL draft and expansion draft, like, it's just chaos all the time. But Andre, the biggest piece of news, really, yes, this NWSL free agent season.
Yes.
And I know we said Dabinia to Chelsea, but you know where Dabinia did not go? Arsenal. She did not go to Arsenal, and I've been holding that in straight to my chest, because that's hilarious. Because, look, she saw, I'm just saying, Jonas doesn't do smart things, especially with his melanated players. And so I'm happy she's staying in the league for my personal gain of, we now still get to watch Dabinia in a same or similar time zone every weekend. I don't know if travel is easy to go see her, because I don't know how to get to Kansas City from New York, but she's still in the league. That's great for the league as a whole, but also Dabinia went to Kansas City, and Kansas City now has a super team. Super Team KC. Yes. They're really KCC. They're the Kansas City Courage. It is. It's a Kansas City Courage. And yeah, Dabinia to KC. Huge news. I honestly thought it was going to be Dabinia to Orlando.
Yeah.
And it would have been Marta and Dabinia.
I'm pretty sure they tried, because they got so much money. I think they just threw the bag at her. But I think that's why I think Dabinia's comments were very interesting, too, because this goes for, like, probably Orlando and Arsenal a bit. She was quoted in The Athletic that she said, being in a competitive team which fights for titles, has its own training structure, and soon its own stadium. These are things that I think are very important and that made my eyes shine. Poetic. Made my eyes shine. I was like, yo, Dabenia, dropping Debbie. The poetry. But yeah, I definitely think like that's smart. It was very smart for Kansas City to focus on building that. I think facilities is a big draw for players and like things that we don't see. This is why I always try to tell people, like, if you stop treating owners, these people with millions and in some cases, sometimes like billions of dollars, stop treating them like precious little like people that need to be coddled and protected, and actually force them to spend some money to actually do something with it. It ain't just everybody gonna go to LA or San Diego. Like, things are important. Other things that we don't see. It ain't just about palm trees and beaches. Sorry, Sky. I think there'll be a lot of players that end up going there, of course. Like, they're always gonna be a draw. But I think you're gonna see a lot more than that. And I think KC just showed you that. Like, yeah, you can beat Kansas City and you can draw Dabenia because you got a dope training facility. You got an NWSL specific stadium that's coming. You were in a championship game just this last season. And you could say, listen, think about that, how that championship game with Portland went. And you tell me exactly what was needed. I would say Dabenia, Vanessa DiBernardo, Morgan Gautreaux, and Lynn Williams. And they got them all for 2023. They're killing it.
Yeah, it's funny. Sorry, Sky took me out for a moment. So I was not expecting it. Dabenia also like thrives in the NWSL. Not saying she wouldn't thrive in Europe, because she would definitely put some players on skates in England and put some players on skates in the Women's Champions League. But also thinking about, you know, we are going into a World Cup year with, I don't know, a team like Arsenal, who we've seen have brought in, you know, big international stars before, like, for example, like Tobin, and having like players not really get regular starting time and having that regular 11 or that starting 11 outside of injuries, it kind of seems hard to break into, at least for regular playing time. I'm not surprised that she would also choose a place where she's going to be the first name on that team sheet day in and day out.
Yeah, no, I actually think that's a really good point, because I do think, you know, especially Arsenal with Beth Mead injured, with Miedema injured, you know, you've got I mean, I'm sure they would rely on Dabenia quite a bit, but also that's not a good thing. You know, like she might think a little differently if those two players were healthy, because then she's got players to like play off of. She gets to like ease into adjusting to a new league, the style of play in the WSL, which, you know, honestly, you said it, but I think the style of her play is maximized in the NWSL. And I have no doubt, like, she could absolutely be a baller over there. Like, she would, like you said, she put people on skate. She scored ridiculous goals, because Dabenia going to do that no matter where you put her, on whatever continent, whatever pitch. But, yeah, I think it's very good for Kansas City, but also overall it's very good for the NWSL to be able to compete with a team like Arsenal and win that race. Because it really seemed for a while, I know there were a lot of Arsenal, you know, supporters and Arsenal bloggers and people who, you know, cover the WSL or who are credible, who were saying that like the deal looks like it's probably going to happen, like if she's leaving. And then we got the announcement that said she was leaving North Carolina, and was like, I was just kind of waiting for January to hit and Arsenal to drop that tweet saying they signed Dabenia, and it was just going to hurt my heart. And it just never came. And then all of a sudden you see Kansas City drop it, and it was like, yo, she's staying here. I think that really means something. I think it's important, because every offseason we kind of see player movement and the conversation comes up with NWSL needs to do this, they're being left behind. And while I do think they need to make a lot of changes, I also think that they're not quite being left behind. And I think some of the other teams across the pond, some of the ones that people have like in their minds, the European teams, the European giants, they kind of assume falsely that like life is so much better over there for players. And you kind of have a player like Dabenia who looked at it and said, yeah, that's cool. Like, y'all play at Emirates every now and then, but sometimes you're at Meadow Park. And the facilities, do you have your own like women's specific training structure? No, you don't. And so you kind of look at these things, and in her mind, the NWSL won. And I do think that's an important thing to note and file away for like future times. Now, that doesn't mean the NWSL should not, like, because it took a team as ambitious as Kansas City to do it. Kansas City didn't exist. I do think that she's an Arsenal player. But I do think that it is important and a model to follow in terms of how to make sure you win some of these battles.
Yeah, and I feel like part of it too is, you know, we spent all of this last season, especially when NWSL teams would have those 3-game weeks, being like load management. And how you, like, for these players, you know, they're playing a lot of games day in and day out. And to be fair with the NWSL, unlike, let's be honest, the WSL, like, D1 Arkema, I almost said legal, D1 Arkema, you know, Liga F in Spain, like, A, those squads are a bit bigger and you have a bit more rotation, but also, like, while we occasionally see in England, you know, the 10th team in the league beat the first team in the league, like, it's a much larger reality in the NWSL, just by the, the entire competitive nature of the game. So it's like, when you are going to Europe, you're also walking into a structure knowing that there are going to be times where you are literally playing once every 3 days for like 6 weeks straight. And I want to say that's like an exaggeration, but honestly, sometimes it isn't. Cause like, if you think about just England, you have the league, you have the FA Cup, you have the Conti Cup. I'm pretty sure there's like, there's definitely a fourth cup in England because Chelsea like won a bunch of things recently. But also, you know, those same structures exist for France and for Spain. And you know, Portugal, like the, those structures exist. So, you know, that there are going to be times where you really are playing a lot and a lot and a lot. And we know for the NWSL, while we do not know the schedule, we do know that they've done away with midweek games. And so that's also a consideration too, especially going into a World Cup year.
Yeah. I think that's a real important point. All right. We got just a couple more, we got some more news. It's a little coaching news we're going to sprinkle here. Sam Laity, longtime assistant with OL Reign, moved on to take the head job at Houston. I actually think that's kind of a dope hire. He kind of was one that's kind of like been under the radar and kind of like in the team, like in the NWSL, like zeitgeist thinking like he's kind of going to be next. Somebody's going to do it. Didn't really happen until this offseason. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what he can do with that squad. Scott Parkinson was hired to replace him as an assistant with OL Reign. That's dope. Didn't work as a head coach at Gotham, but he's still, by all accounts, good dude and knows his stuff. I think he recently got his whatever level coaching license he was up. I think he got one of the big ones, like the main one. So definitely knows some stuff, and it'll be good, I think, to have him in that environment. And then also Portland hired a coach, Mike Norris. He was already on the staff. They ended up hiring him as their head coach to replace Rianne Wilkinson, who we ain't going to go into all that again. But yeah, there was some stuff there. She basically lost the locker room with how she responded to, I guess, a concern over a relationship with the player. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to say it. I mean, now there are no more TED coaching jobs open for the NWSL.
I think that's right. We 12 of 12. I think
they've all been filled. A bit concerning that we really haven't seen a lot of change to having more women head coaches, having more black and brown head coaches. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like, it's not saying that there aren't qualified candidates. We've seen that they're great. For example, they're great women's head coaches at the college level. Thinking about Marguerite, I don't know how to say pronounce her last name, so I'm not going to try. But
just won the college cup with UCLA.
I was like UCLA's head coach, and her name is Marguerite. But I don't want to butcher her last name because I'm trying my hardest not to do that anymore. Of just like guessing how to pronounce a player's name or a person's name. But you know, she did great things with that UCLA squad. So, and obviously we know that, like, it's her first head coaching job in college, but like, you know, there are qualified candidates out there. It's really, the question is, you know, which team is going to A, take a gamble on them, but also, and I feel like this is really, really important, pay the same that the colleges are paying.
Yeah.
you can make a lot of money coaching in college. And if we really want to, you know, continue that pipeline and having the best qualified coaches come up the pipeline, you got to start paying the big bucks, not only for players, but also for coaches and assistants and everyone in women's soccer. The money, like, people need to start pulling out their pocketbooks, as my mom would say.
Yeah, I was actually listening to Full Time with Meg Linehan, and she has Steph Young on, and I just think they made a really good point that, like, the times of, like, you know, keeping things tight financially and, like, keeping the purse strings tight and, you know, those days are over. Like, yeah, they had their chance. Like, and the situation kind of, the discussion really revolved around Arnim Whistler, because we know the mindset of a lot of owners that came in like him were, we just need the league to survive and we're not going to invest this much money because we don't know what's they had no ambition. They were just, you know, kind of there to be there and just kind of wanted to have like the pats on the back because you were doing something quote unquote important for the women's game. But like this, like the league's taken off. We've seen already with the ambition of certain teams, certain owners. And I think now you're also looking at there's probably a cohort, especially depending on who takes over the Thorns front office and especially who takes over at Chicago, because both those teams are for sale now. I'm hoping that you get the same brand of ownership that is ambitious and eager, because I think that's what it's going to take. And really, you're not going to fit in unless that, because I think some of the new ownership groups, the expansion teams, of course, but also Kansas City and Washington, I think they've really shown that they're going to invest in their clubs. And the kind of times, like the old way of thinking of the past is not going to work anymore. And that is a very good thing. So I think you are definitely right. The salaries need to match. You need to do it. And you also need to know what you're doing, because Orlando tried it with Amanda Cromwell. And if they would have poked around just a little bit, they would have known it's probably not a good idea. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And we do hope to see much better hiring practices from here on out, because it's going to be important. Can't keep recycling the same coaches or looking down the hall and calling the first like white face you see. Like, you're actually going to need to like build a squad, give somebody a chance, you know, get somebody who knows what they're doing in women's soccer, get somebody like give opportunities to people who have deserved them. I mean, you talked about, you know, UCLA's head coach did that in our first year. And I also think about Mike Bell down at TCU, been there for 10 years. I think he definitely earned a chance. If he wants to leave, if he wants to try professional, somebody needs to be knocking at his door and sending him some money to be just like, hey, come on, let's bring you up and coach a team. So, yeah, I think that's all fair. That's all true. That's all accurate. And, you know, we do hope to see a change. Don't know if it will, but we hope so.
Yeah, 100%. Andre, anything else about what, at least the things, anything else about the, I guess, current moves in the NWSL before the draft?
Nope, let's do draft talk. All right, the NWSL draft is coming up. It is going to be this Thursday. Whenever you're listening to this, Thursday means January 12th. So sorry if you're listening to this on the 13th, the draft already happened. But we wanted to talk about the draft anyway, because I'm so excited. I'm going to the draft, and it's going to be my first time going to the draft. And what a damn draft class to be in. Like, I kept refreshing the page because they did like a live draft tracker for like the first time. And it was really dope to see the names every time you refresh it and they added somebody, you spotted a name being like, oh, yo, they're going to be in the league. That's great. Or we hope they're going to be in the league. They still got to sign depending on what team they get drafted to. But I'm hyped. This draft class is absurd. And it keeps getting more absurd. Now the registration deadline is over. We have the full list. But yo, it's wild. So let's run through it real quick. I'm just going to do the first round, the draft order of the first round. Angel City, as we mentioned with the trade, they got the number one overall pick in that trade. Gotham only bumped down to number two, so they got the second pick. Orlando Pride is three. Rossing Louisville is four. Y'all thought it wasn't going to carry over to 2023. You're wrong. Rossing Louisville is four. Portland Thorns is five. North Carolina Courage, they got three picks in the first round, y'all. This is ridiculous. They got the sixth pick. Chicago Red Stars have the seventh. Houston Dash have the eighth. Then North Carolina again at the ninth. There's like a trade. There's something that's going to kick in before the draft, I believe, that's going to end up giving Kansas City the number 10 pick. Then North Carolina again at number 11, and the Thorns won the championship, so they'll pick last. As of today, I'm saying this, what is it, Tuesday night. So as Courtney said, there's always a lot of trades and ridiculousness that goes on. Very well could change any minute, any moment, whatever. But as we sit right here and record this podcast, that is the order.
Yeah, I will not be at the draft because gotta do my day job. there's a lot going into this draft from reporting from last week, especially with the blockbuster trade between four teams, and seeing her name officially on that sheet. We know that 18-year-old Alyssa Thompson, who is committed to going to Stanford, has registered for the NWSL draft. We saw her get her first. Can you imagine getting your first cap for the U.S. Women's National Team at Wembley?
I know, right?
Pardon?
In front of like 76,000 people. I was like, okay, like, y'all wildin'.
What? So yeah, she's in the draft, reported to be the number one pick, which is why, or potentially why, Angel City made the trade with Gotham to draft her number one overall. Before Alyssa Thompson, the rumor to go to Europe, but currently registered for the NWSL draft, Michelle Cooper, hopefully, fingers crossed, knocked on all the woods, would go to Gotham, which would be great because she is an absolute baller and a menace.
Listen.
I would die. And also people talking about, so if Michelle Cooper does go to Gotham, which I would very much like for that to happen because it benefits me personally as a lover of sport sauce and also being able to cover the team up close. That would just be great for me. Everyone's talking about who she looks up to. Does no one think she could potentially look up to her fellow Duke Blue Devil, Imani Dorsey? I feel like everyone forgot about that. Rookie of the Year, Imani Dorsey? I'm just saying I would like for it to happen.
Well, and I also want to shout out, that's Mac Herman trophy winner for 2022.
Yes.
Michelle Cooper. Shout out to her for winning
officially,
that.
Oh, yes, officially. Officially 2022 Mac Herman winner, Michelle Cooper. Yeah, I'm just really excited about it. I think last draft, 2022 draft, Gotham didn't have any number one picks, which I honestly thought was a bit concerning. Not saying that they didn't get some, you know, some great rookies coming in or like, well, younger players. But, you know, I think it's going to be really good for Gotham to have a pick, like a top five pick. And hopefully, you know, it turns out better than the last time they had a top five pick. And they, at least from all accounts going into this draft, have been smart. Or at least smarter, because I don't like Estelle Johnson leaving to go to North Carolina. But they have been smarter in this draft. Or, sorry, in this offseason in terms of, you know, player trades, new contracts, things like that.
Listen, the thing I need to happen and the thing I need to see from Gotham in 2023 is...
goals.
Yasmin Ryan, Midge Purse, Ifeanyi Manu, and Michelle Cooper. Are you kidding me with that? Like, they legit have an opportunity to do that. Like, on Thursday, they call her name. They sign her. That's what's going to run out. To some poor defense is going to have to face that the first week of the season and then on out throughout the season. That's ridiculous.
Well, like, also, you have Taylor Smith on the wings.
I'm telling you, like, listen.
Gotham's going to have a headache with that. Trying to figure out who their best...
Yes,
front. Victoria Pickett back in
Victoria Pickett behind, that was a very important pickup as well. The squad, like, there's still a couple things to do, but they have massive, like, with the Yasmin, that's why I think the Yasmin Ryan deal was so big, because you already have her in, so you already know you're going to see an improvement in midfield, and then you have the ability to add somebody like Michelle Cooper, who I'm telling y'all, she has been pro ready. She left college. I think that she just completed her sophomore season. Her, just watching her, she's ridiculous. The shot on that, both feet, power in her shots, placement in her shots. She is an absurd talent. I was like, I wrote a thing trying to see like who might be able to challenge, you know, Deanna Ordonez's rookie scoring record. Michelle Cooper is at the top of the list. She is going to be such a problem in the NWSL. So I really hope it happens.
I too hope it happens, because it's going to be tasty. There are going to be things happening. There's going to be hooting and hollering. I will tell you this now. There's going to be hootering and hollering from the press box. And, you know, sometimes in life we just need to let things happen. And this is one of those things that we just need to let things happen, because if Gotham drafts her, it's going to be great.
And you know what? I will also note, like, I think it was really bold of Angel City to make that deal and also convince Alyssa Thompson, because she didn't have to come out. Like, I was doing some research on her. She committed to Stanford when she was 15 years old.
Well, she's only 18 now.
Exactly.
I know,
but it's just what? And I was like, her last season, I know it's high school, but the school, if you know anything about the school she went to, that's like, it's like a high school in name only. It's basically like pre-college, like scholarships and everything.
College.
Like this, yeah, like it's ridiculous. But she did, I think in 18 games, she scored 48 goals, 46 or 48, something like that. Like, she is an absurd talent. And I also saw that she ran last year, she stepped off the pitch onto the track, and she ran the second fastest 100 meters time.
In the state of California.
Yeah, I was just like, yo, that she is an athlete, but also she is a baller. So, like, that is a great move from Angel City. Like, definitely a star for the future, and they are going to have her at 18. And she gets to sit there and learn from Kristen Press and Sydney LaRue. Like, I'm real hyped about all of that, too. Like, that was a really smart move, and people may look at that and they may not be familiar with Alyssa Thompson. That won't last long.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be fun. It's going to be long. I don't think I'm alive to tweet through it. Well, actually, I'm not. I don't even know if I'm going to tweet through it. I might have one hooting and hollering for Gotham's second pick, but that's about it. Wrapping up the NWSL, we did see that they put out a statement. I believe, was it yesterday? What are days?
I think it was, because
it was yesterday.
Yeah, everything hit. It was like the Dabini news and then that. And it was like, yo, can y'all chill for a hot second?
Oh, yeah. And there was the Dabini news also in the middle. Portland tweeted out who their next coach was. And we're like, this tweet's probably scheduled, but not the time. Yesterday, January 10th. Nope, wrong. Yesterday, January 9th. Today, it's 10th. We saw that the league put out a release basically in response to the joint investigation report that was released on December 14th, 2022. And their release was announcing what they call corrective action in response to the findings of the joint investigative report. If you were somehow under a rock, which honestly, jealous, about the joint investigative report, the team found that there were failures across the league and across U.S. soccer that were largely systemic in nature and made recommendations on several forward-looking and structural reforms to improve the league's policies and practices. And so the league goes on in this release, and following an extensive review of the report, these are the actions imposed by NWSL Commissioner Jessica Berman. First, and, you know, she has quite a long quote that I'll wrap up with, but first, individual sanctions. Level one, it's permanent exclusion from the NWSL, and that is for Paul Riley, Christy Holly, Rory Dames, and Richie Burke. They said, bye, don't let the door hit you on your way out, you're never coming back. Level two is suspension and further employment, and the NWSL is conditional, and that is for former Utah Royals coach Craig Harrington. And he is also a former coach of Club America in Liga MX Femenil, which he was also dismissed from that job as well. So he's suspended and is ineligible to work for the NWSL in any capacity for the next 2 years until January 9th, 2025. And to qualify for future employment, he must meet a set of requirements set below that we're going to talk about. It's the same for former Gotham GM Elise LaHue. Further employment within the league will be conditioned on the following factors: being established to the satisfaction of the commissioner in her complete discretion, which is acknowledging wrongdoing and accepting personal responsibility for inappropriate conduct, participating in training, which I'm assuming for that training will be anti-harassment training and training similar, and demonstrating a sincere commitment to correcting behavior. Level three, which is future employment in the NWSL, is conditional. That is for former OL Reign head coach Fareed Benstidi, former Houston head coach James Clarkson, former Houston head coach Vera Paugh, former Orlando Pride head coach Amanda Cromwell, Orlando Pride assistant coach Sam Green, and also Orlando Pride coach Aline Reese. And to the same, and their future employment is conditional to the same degree that of what I just said of acknowledging wrongdoing, demonstrating a sincere commitment to correcting behavior, accepting personal responsibility, etc. So that was for individual sanctions. Then we get some organizational sanctions. Level one, which is, so these are kind of my understanding of it, and Andre, I know we're going to talk about this. I'm curious to know what you think. I kind of understood these as fines, let's say, because as I go over it, it's like not necessarily 100% black and white of what these mean, but level one, which is a sanction of not less than $1 million and systemic changes. The first one is the NWSL league office itself. So yes, the league is, or Jessica Berman is fining the league's front office $1 million and to implement systemic changes. In addition, for clubs, first it's the Chicago Red Stars for $1.5 million, and that Artem Wisler is selling the Chicago Red Stars, and the NWSL will work with him to ensure the club is transferred in an expeditious and appropriate manner. And also for the Portland Thorns, which was $1 million that was previously announced by Paulson as a pledge to support the establishment of the NWSL Player Safety Office, and that he is also selling the Thorns, and the league will work with him to make sure the club is transferred in an expeditious and appropriate manner. For level two, we have Racing Louisville. They're fined $200,000 and they will be required to hire sporting staff, i.e. coaches and general managers, that is completely distinct from the men's team, in which they're shared ownership, and the Racing Louisville staff must report directly into ownership. For the North Carolina Courage, it is $100,000, and that is the same, and they are also required to hire sporting staff, coaches, general managers, distinct from the men's team that share ownership, and the Courage staff will report directly into Courage ownership. Level three, Owl Rain, it's $50,000. Gotham, it is also $50,000. There are no, at least listed here, there are no systemic changes or organizational changes they need to make. And also in this list, they include clubs that are not subject to penalties, but I guess just included. For the Washington Spirit, given that Steve Baldwin, who was then CEO and controlling owner of the Washington Spirit, sold the club to Y. Michelle Kang in March 2022, which we all cheered about, they will have no further corrective action. And for the Kansas City Current, which is interesting, this part is probably the most interesting out of all that is listed, but it says, Kansas City Current, while it is concerning that several players raise concerns about being mistreated or retaliation upon raising those concerns, there is no finding that the club retaliated against players. Which is like, I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. But wrapping it up, because I've been talking for a while and my throat is getting dry, Commissioner Berman said the league and its clubs have taken meaningful steps to begin this structural reform and understand and accept the continual commitment to enhancing league standards that are necessary to build a safe and positive environment for our players, staff, fans, and partners. The Board of Governors hired me with a very specific mandate to effectuate this transformation. These changes will require leadership, accountability, funding, and a willingness to embrace this new way of conducting business. Our league and clubs are committed to making these changes and will do so with continued input from the NWSL Players Association to make the NWSL a league that sets the standard for the future of sports. I look forward to sharing more about our progress on our efforts ahead of our 2023 season. So that was a lot. Andre, how do you feel about this release, the actions that the NWSL is taking, teams fined, teams not fined? What do you think?
So I think, first of all, this is extremely, unfortunately, this is unprecedented for the NWSL. We haven't seen teams, individuals suffering consequences for their behavior. The worst they got was let go and kind of a pat on the back, a secret pat on the back, which is how they were allowed to continue and enabled to continue to be terrible across multiple organizations and clubs. So I think this is big. Like these are the kinds of actions that we've been looking for. Now, I don't want to say like, yes, they finally did it. They did everything. Everything's fine now. I think there's still a lot of things to do, but this is a signal of being going in the right direction. And I actually like that you brought up James O'Connor, because I think that basically what the league said is, if you won't fire him, then this is how we're going to remove him from our, like, how we do things.
And that's why I think it was really important that they are requiring both Louisville and North Carolina. And I think any team that comes that has a men's team connected, any group that has a men's team connected, you're not just going to be able to share staff. Like, you have to hire your own separate staff. And I think that's really important, because the way that these things work is sometimes you can be really protected on the men's side because you don't have, like, you got different worries over there. You're not going to have maybe a similar type of issues, especially when it comes to like gendered, either harassment or something like that. Like, you're not going to have that kind of violence sometimes on that side. And so somebody might be hesitant to let go of somebody who's doing well on the men's side, and they'll just deal with them. And I think that's what we've seen with James O'Connor. So the NWSL said, okay, cool, that's how you feel about it, fine, but remove him and get somebody else in there that's going to report directly. So I think that they are attempting to make things right. I think the fines are big. Like, I don't know where the hell Arnold Wilson are going to come up with this money. So, like, this is probably going to get passed. That fine is probably going to get passed on to whoever ends up buying the club. But still, I think it's good to do that. I think it's very good to fine teams. I think it's very good to call out coaches and say, like, y'all are banned. I do wish, like, Ben Seedy, he is a habitual line stepper. Like, we knew about this dude well before he came to OL Reign. He did it at PSG. Horan did a whole podcast and had a quotes written about it in a piece. Like, she talked about that. He doesn't seem to be remorseful for any of that. So I don't really understand it. But I say that, and I'll also say, let some team try to hire the dude now. Like, he's effectively banned no matter what, because I don't think anybody's going to be bold enough. And if you even want to get cynical about it and say, like, teams will do whatever, he was bad with that team anyway. All the talent he had with OL Reign, and they were trash. So there ain't really no reason to hire a dude anymore or anything like that. So I kind of look at it that way as well. I do think that it is good to put the names out there to list what the conditions are. So, like, for me, yeah, I think the biggest thing is just that these are some of the it gives you a slight bit of relief when you see actual consequences for behavior that we have known is terrible across multiple investigations. And I actually thought, the NWSL Players Association released a series of tweets. They're basically just, pictures, images with alt text and some their statement. I think NWSL PA President Tori Huster said it as well. And I want to just read it because I think she did a very good job in kind of summarizing where she's at. Reminder, by the way, Tori Huster is an OG. She's been in this league since its inception. And so she is seeing all this stuff, and she's been with the Spirit, so she definitely saw that up close and personal with Richie Burke. But she said, quote, "A new NWSL begins today. No sanction will ever be enough to undo the harm that too many players endured. By taking our power back, players have achieved a complete and total overhaul of the NWSL ecosystem, from the league office to club ownership and staff, with new policies and systems in place to protect player safety." And the reason I wanted to end with that and why I love it is because every single time we talk about this, we have to center the victims. And I think it's very important to say that while these sanctions and while the bans are important, people were harmed, and nothing is going to make them feel better or remove that harm. So the only thing you can do is make sure that you do have those consequences, but then you also do the structural stuff to make sure that nobody else is harmed the way that they were. So I really appreciated that statement, because every time we see it, I think Becky Sauerbrunn did something similar when she was questioned about the investigation. She said, "It doesn't matter if I'm not safe, not everybody's safe, and that's not good enough. The players who understand it and get it and center the victims, you can tell. And I think those are the ones who we need to listen to. And I'm glad that they're with the NWSLPA, and it seems like the NWSLPA is doing the exact same thing in conjunction with the NWSL now and finally."
Yeah, and sorry, I laughed in the middle of you talking about Arnim Whistler, because for some reason my brain immediately said that you were going to say that he was going to pay that $1 million fine in installments, which made me laugh.
Oh, he very much probably will, because that boy broke.
Well, I know, but just like the concept of you saying that made me giggle. I think one thing for me here, besides, like, I mean, I just gave you all that information from this. There's a lot to kind of break through here, but I think the silver lining of this is that, and to be fair, in this we have seen, for example, from the conditional future appointment of Amanda Cromwell, Sam Green, and Aleen Reese, like that, and I would very much hope that any type of behavior that has been dictated in the joint investigation is not only not allowed to be in this league and is in the process of getting rooted out, but also that now that there is a players association and a collective bargaining agreement, like this ongoing process. And I think when we think about getting rid of abusers and, you know, cutting the abuse out, that is not like a one and done, like that's not a one and done action. That is something that is a ongoing process, because unfortunately, like, there are people in this world who abuse and do terrible things, and sometimes you will come in contact with them, but at least now there is a framework, not only from, you know, the PA and the players, but also there's now a history and framework also on the league side, which I think is important as well, of how to make sure that this abuse does not continue. And if it unfortunately does, if something happens again, that there can be immediate and swift action to at least, you know, get the person away from the players. And I think we saw that not only with what was happening in Orlando, but also if we think about, for example, James Clarkson, and as soon as he was put under immediate investigation, and, you know, could not seem to not be able to continue harming players and things like that. So I don't know. I just think that's important that this is not a one and done, but that it is a continual effort. And I think that last line of what Commissioner Berman said of the club league and leagues and clubs are committing to making these changes and will do so with continued input from the PA to make the NWSL a better league is really, really important. Though one thing that does stick with me, especially with some of the recommendations from the joint investigation, is of course what the league just released is the big ones. Get the abusers out. They're never allowed to come back, right? Or if they do come back, they have to, you know, meet several conditions. But there were also more conclusions and recommendations in that, like, in those reports. And so I'm now curious going forward how the league plans to implement those, especially when we think about player safety. And not just talking about, like, physical safety, and you know, being able to not be abused by, you know, coaches, GMs, support staff, etc. But thinking about, you know, not to go back to expansion, but the Utah Royals are coming back, and we know that for the NWSL, but also other sporting leagues in this country, that there have been many, many times where athletes do not feel safe competing in those places. So, like, what are you gonna do about that? Because that is, you know, that is still a part of this conversation, and that is also a big sticking point going forward, for Black players, for queer players, for, you know, like any player of color, or just anyone who does not feel safe playing in those environments or are wary that their family might not feel safe supporting them in those environments. What is the league going to do then? And so I feel like this is a great first step. Like, honestly, it's a great first step, but there's still much to do going forward.
Yeah, and I think that is the right conclusion. It is a good step. It's an unprecedented step, and it's great to see that. But like you said, a whole lot more to do, and hopefully, it sounds like the league is working with the PA, which hasn't always been the case, and so it's important to continue to do that. And I think the PA is headed in the right direction with some of their understandings of like I said, centering victims and making sure that, you know, they are being responsive and putting pressure on the league to fix these things that have been so wrong for so long. So, no real way to transition from that to Heated and Hyped. So we're just going to say we are now in Heated and Hyped, because we know the COP podcast is getting long, but y'all knew it was what it was. We haven't talked to y'all in a minute. We haven't talked to each other in a minute. This was always going to happen, and it's all good. So you know what? I'm going to start us off with my heated, because I want Courtney to go with her heated and hyped, like, back to back. And then I'll close us out. My heated, you know, my heated is kind of tongue in cheek a little bit. Actually, you know what? I have two heateds. I'm sorry. I'm going to be quick with them though. My first heated is just time zones, because Australian Open is about to start.
And my sleep schedule, I already told y'all at the beginning of this podcast, like my sleep schedule is ridiculous anyway. And the Australian Open is just going to make it even worse. So like that, like time zones is my thing. And of course, with the Australian New Zealand World Cup, might as well just get used to it. It's going to be a zombie from like here on. So it's going to be a problem. My other heated is just toll roads. What the hell are you charging me to drive on your road for? Like when I went up to the US Women's National Team game in New Jersey, I did not realize that every time you drive like 5 miles on a New Jersey road, you hit some sort of toll. Like it just made me like, and I don't care.
Well, how are you driving to New Jersey? What are you talking about?
There are so many tolls. It wasn't only in New Jersey, but just like to get from Maryland to New Jersey, there are so many tolls and I don't carry cash. So they were just like, all right, go on through. So I was getting like a letter every single day, like pay this toll, pay this toll, a little screenshot, a little picture, like mugshot of my car. It was black and white. It was all ridiculous. I was like, yo, why did this trip cost me this much money? Because toll, like we got a bunch of them in Virginia too. And I avoid them because I know how to drive around here. But like, yo, I don't understand. Like, stop it. Stop it. That's what tax money is for. You don't charge everybody else driving on your damn road. So yeah, that's what I'm heated about.
Honestly, I don't really know what I'm heated about. I guess like people being mean to me on the internet. But now I'm just off Twitter and I'm like, now my life is like significantly better. So can I really be that mad? Yeah, I was like, honestly, I don't really have that much to be heated about. And you want to know why? Because I haven't really been on the internet. And so things that I see that would make me mad haven't really been making me mad. Obviously, well, I guess my true heated is me official not getting called up to the national team because it's absolutely ridiculous. And I'm also part of that heated is because it's like people don't take the Liga MX Femenil seriously outside of, or at least here, a lot of people in the States don't take it seriously. And it's ridiculous because they're absolute ballers there. And I like really want to say, you know, Mexico's going to come and put like some of y'all defenders on a highlight reel during the World Cup, but they won't be there, which makes me sad. And I'm very sorry for bringing it up. So anyway, my hyped Quinta Brunson in Abbott Elementary are getting accolades right now. Quinta Brunson just won Best Actress in a comedy musical. I believe that's the title. For the Golden Globes, which are happening as we speak. And I'm using that to ignore the reality of UVA men's basketball, which brings me residual pain. but I am hyped about Abbott Elementary because it is truly it's like, in the TV shows I've watched, it's probably a top, I'm going to say it's like a top 10 TV show for me. It's just like real feel good. And the writing's really good. And it's really funny. And there's a relationship slow burn, which is just great and terrible at the same time. Also what I'm hyped about, which Andre, I remembered it in the middle of the episode, but I didn't know how to transition to it. But I need to hear your best Benoit Blanc accent. Because I did watch Glass Onion, and I have in fact been working on my CSI KFC accent because I watched a Netflix video yesterday that had the cast of Glass Onion trying to do Benoit Blanc's accent, which I don't know if it's gotten better or worse in Glass Onion, or maybe I'm just more used to it and it became like less kooky, but I need you to do your best Benoit Blanc accent.
Listen, I absolutely do not have one because I just laugh every time. No, because I just laugh. That's all I do because I can't even fake it because it is so absurd. It's absurd, but it's also perfect for the character and the setting, like the whole the movies. It works. It absolutely works, but it is no accent that exists anywhere, but that except for maybe Foghorn Leghorn in the cartoons. But it is hysterical. And that's why I cannot do it because I laugh. I get like two syllables in and then I start cracking up. So I'm sorry. I'm going to have to work on it and get back to you on that one. But since you said you do one, let's hear that.
It's just like you have to think like of New Orleans draw and then it just kind of comes out. And then you also, if you think like CSI KFC, I'm Benoit Blanc. It confounds me. It's like a glass onion. And it'll slowly come out. Maybe I'll do it next time if you put me on the spot. I had to find a good quote from him because I was literally watching last night and I was like getting better and worse. if that makes sense.
Appreciate you doing that. That was fantastic and also terrible. So like I said, you nailed it because that's the way it goes. Yeah, my hype is the draft. I'm going to the draft, my first draft. I am so ready for all the chaos. I see people being scared because it says some say 6 to 11 p.m. Some just say 6 p.m. to end. Like, they have no idea
I don't want to talk
when
about
this thing
it.
Is going to end. And I am here for it. I know I watched the draft a few times and all the timeouts get frustrating. You know, expansion draft, all that stuff, it gets frustrating. But you know what? I'm going to be there in person. I want all the chaos. And again, with Courtney's caveat, if players are being traded, I hope it's not against their will. Make sure you get their buy-in. That's how you do it. But I still think that, like, there is a lot to do. I think more and more teams are being ambitious, which means you're going to see potentially a lot of movement. So I am here for it. And at the very least, you're going to see the introduction to a lot of brand new ballers into the league that are going to be great to watch this season. So I'm hype about that. And that's it. That's the podcast. I ain't got no extra outro. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.